It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
And we're going to be talking to Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman is a highly recognized and awarded businessman, and he's got a very interesting story. I want you guys to listen to this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bert, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, I know a lot of our listeners may not have heard your story, so before we get into it, and we're going to be talking about how to get out of credit card debt quickly, but before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story.
Well, certainly, and I guess we could start with the old standard rags to riches, but everybody's heard those stories so many times, they're almost like chopped liver anymore. So we don't call mine rags to riches, more like rats to riches. We grew up in a neighborhood where there were more rats per capita than there were people. But from there, fortunately, even though I was a high school dropout, spent 5.5 years in high school, I was an alcoholic by the time I was 17, I'm essentially deaf and wear hearing aids to hear about half of what goes on around about me, and grew up on welfare and poverty, and left home when I was 14. I managed to finally get my boat righted, as they would call it, and honestly, Bert, it happened because I met the woman of my life, the lady I met when I was 14 and she was 11. We dated for 10 years, and we've been married now for 36, and I give her all the credit in the world for kicking my rump, so to speak, back to the system. I got a GED. With my GED, I managed to get into college on probation, graduated on probation 4 years later, got into law school on probation, flunked out, got back in, finally graduated on probation, and with that, where Kathy and I have, over the course of our life, we've been blessed and fortunate that we've been able to have some pretty significant business success. In 1986, we went broke. I live in Oklahoma, and we were in the oil and gas business, and the price of oil went from $40 a barrel down to $14, and we went flat, bankrupt, broke, and from there we saw an opportunity, the same opportunity that's going on right now. We saw the economy being in the tank. We saw massive numbers of people being unemployed and banks failing. And so we started buying bad debt. We started buying charged-off credit cards for literally a nickel on the dollar. And with that, over the next 12 years, we created a billion-dollar company. Kathy and I became the 25th wealthiest people in America, members of the Forbes 400. And fortunately, we have won a whole list of business awards, none of which will buy you a cup of coffee anywhere, but they're real pretty when they hang on the wall.
Well, you know, it's good to be recognized by your peers. I think it does say a little bit, but you're right. When it comes down to it, it doesn't buy a cup of coffee. So tell us, Bill, you went from literally from rats to riches, as you like to say. You've been married to Kathy for 36 years?
36, yeah, which means she had to get a Purple Heart or something.
That's right. Well, you know what? I think it's kind of cool that you give her all the credit. That is an amazing thing, how women can affect us.
Well, absolutely, Bert. You know, and it's so understated. I mean, you know, the old adage of behind every successful man, there's a woman. Well, that is so much baloney. Kathy has never been behind me. She's never been in front of me. She's always been alongside of me. And people who have great relationships, those are the ones who more often than not are the ones who are great successes in life. So isn't there a lesson there? You know, get a relationship, keep a relationship, work a relationship, and then maybe the rest of your life will fall in place.
Well, absolutely. It's very difficult to have success outside if you're not having success inside the home.
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
All right, well, let's get to it. Tell us about how to get out of credit card debt quickly.
Well, here is the quickest way possible, and it kind of rubs against the norm, and I don't want people to think I'm preaching some kind of financial anarchy or something when I tell them that, but remember now, the business that we created was buying charged-off credit cards, and we bought 4.5 million individual accounts, so I have some background here. What I'm suggesting, for people who are so far underwater that they can't see out, and, you know, that has a different definition for different people, but if you look at your own finances and say, at the job I have right now, at the way things are going, I am so far in. It doesn't matter how you got there. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. But if that's where you're at, you have to look at some pretty extraordinary situations to get out of the hole you're in. And one of the things you can do is, and here it comes, quit paying your credit card bills. when you quit paying your credit card bills, it will hurt your credit rating. Oh, boy, there it is almost an immediate thing. But the truth of the matter is, Bert, if somebody's that far upside down, they already have already hurt their own credit rating. And so one more little ding on it isn't probably going to make a big difference to them. Now, conversely, if your credit is good, you'd never want to do this. But if your credit's already been shot, if you quit paying your credit card bills, here's what happens. And you will get some phone calls. You'll get collectors calling you. But if you just keep saying no, after 180 days, the credit card company, the bank, has to charge off the debt. That's a rule. That's a law, actually. That's a GAAP accounting rule. And the bank will charge off the debt and then sells those loans, those credit card debts, for as low as a nickel on the dollar to people like me. And when we buy them for a nickel on the dollar, we call up the same customer and we're prepared to settle for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. So a person who is, say, $10,000 in debt on their credit card right now and can't pay the 10 grand because they just don't have it, they might be able to settle with somebody for, say, $1,500. And the problem is the bank won't let them settle with the bank for $1,500. So that's the one thing they can do is nothing. Don't pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, eventually they will be sold off to someone else who will settle with you for pennies on the dollar.
Well, that's a great strategy. It's kind of like reverse leverage.
It is exactly that. You know, it's kind of the one step short of bankruptcy. You know, when you file bankruptcy because you're so far in you can't get back out, you know you're going to hurt your credit, but you also know you're going to effectuate a solution. You know you're going to make a whole bunch of that junk go away. Well, this is a half step. Now, it's certainly right in line with going bankrupt because it's heading down that path, but it may be the one thing that keeps you from filing bankruptcy. And it would be better to have one or two creditors messing up your credit score as wiping out all of them.
Right. Typically, bankruptcy, and I know the bankruptcy law has changed, and maybe you don't know the answer, but typically bankruptcy tends to stay on your credit for, what is it now, 7 or 10 years?
It is as long as 10 years that it will continue to show up or haunt you, as they say. And yes, I'm familiar with that. In 1986, we filed bankruptcy. So I know again from experience that is the last straw, last resort, and I don't encourage people to do it unless they just absolutely can't take care of their family, can't take care of their other obligations. There is a higher sense of order here, and that's why the bankruptcy rules were created. You know, not for just to let people run up bills and just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just walk away from it. No, it's for good, honest, serious, legitimate people who find themselves in a place they never would have imagined.
Sure. And you know, the thing that you just hit on there that people don't realize is that when you start believing that it'll never happen to you, that's when it happens to you.
Oh, and right now, Bert, it's happening to people who have never, ever imagined it can happen to them. See, in the old days, a few years ago, we used to think that people with credit card problems and the people who would think about bankruptcy, well, those are, you know, we would kind of put them in that, well, they must be lazy or they must not have gotten a good education or they probably didn't work very hard. And we kind of put them all in a little category, rightly or wrongly. That's kind of the way we do things. But this time around, in this great recession we're in right now, there are people who did it by the rules. They went to school, they studied hard, they got good grades, they went and got a job, they showed up for work every single day of their life, they went and bought a house with a white picket fence, they married the girl next door, they followed every single rule to follow the American dream, and it turned out that maybe some of that wasn't as true as they told us. And now these are people who have never failed before, have never had difficulties before, and now they're unemployed and not able to pay their bills.
You know, something that you just brought up, I think that this generation is one of those generations that hasn't been tested. This economy is their first test.
It is indeed, and I feel so bad for the people going through what they're going through right now. Now, a guy like me, I'm 61 years old, and I have failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded, and I have screwed up so many times it's almost pathetic. I'm good at failure. I'm good at screwing up. I'm good at getting knocked down and figuring out how to get back up because I've done it a lot. Now, people who have never had it happen to them, it is the most traumatic thing they may experience in their entire lifetime. And quite frankly, some of them may not know how to deal with it.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is failure is a good way to succeed.
It is the only way to succeed. And here's a challenge I give everybody on this call. The Forbes 400 is a list that's published every October by Forbes magazine, so you can go online and get it or wherever you might choose to read it. And read the stories of the people who are on the Forbes 400 list. And except for a few people who inherited some money, and there's usually a handful of them on there, the ones who are self-made, every one of them failed at least once. Some of them failed a half a dozen times. Some of them have filed bankruptcy three or four times in their life. And that's what it almost takes, failure to succeed.
Well, you know, Walt Disney, I believe, filed bankruptcy four
Indeed.
Or five times.
Indeed.
And on top of that, his best friend, which is the famous Art Linkletter, you know, gave up on him, wouldn't lend him the $1,000 he needed to buy what is now Walt Disney in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm. No, but, the stories are, you know, I mean, they're by the thousands. So, you know, when I started, I'm a student of this industry because I try to share what it is I've learned along the way. The very reason you and I are on this call today is hoping that maybe somebody will hear something that might have some value in their life. Well, I began looking at all of the reasons people succeed and the reasons people fail, and I found an awful lot of correlation between having failed and learning a lesson and then going to a much higher success than you ever would have been able to go to but for the failure.
Absolutely. Bill Bartman, thank you very much. This is Bert Martinez. Thank you.
And Bert, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Anthony Saccaro, founder and president of Providence Financial and Insurance Services, a financial planner and registered investment advisor, but is first and foremost an educator. For over 15 years, he has consulted with literally thousands of individuals about their finances. He's passionate about teaching and coaching clients on the universe of investment options in order to help them develop clear income strategies for a secure future. Anthony Saccaro, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Bert, thank you for having me here. Love your show.
Thank you so much. All right, so I'm excited to have you here because I want to get your thoughts on what's been happening there with the White House. You know, the Trump administration is currently proposing reducing taxes for corporations from 35% to 15%, which is a massive, massive cut. Talk about this. What do you think are going to be the ramifications?
Yeah, I really think that there's two parts to this. I think there's the short-term effects, which are probably not going to be good, and then I think there's the long-term effects, which I think are going to be absolutely fantastic. It's one of those one step back, two step forward type situation. When you make government cuts initially, what's going to happen is you're going to decrease the revenue of the government. That's what that tax cuts are going to do. And so they're trying to figure out different ways to offset that, cutting 401ks. But there's initially going to be a decrease in the amount of revenue that the government is bringing in, and a decrease in government revenue is not good up front. Now, what's going to happen in the long run, Bert, is it's going to make corporations incentivize them to go out and spend more money. And a lot of people, I think, don't understand this. The tax cuts in corporations are going to put more cash in the corporations' pockets. The corporations will then go out and spend some of that cash on capital or hire more people. If they hire more people, then there are more people working. If there are more people working, there's more people paying taxes. If there's more people paying taxes, then it increases the cash flow back in the whole government system. But this whole process takes a long time, and I think it could be a couple of years, maybe even half a dozen years or so, before it really has an impact on the economy. So overall, long run, great impact, phenomenal. Short run, I think we could have some major problems ahead, and it might trickle into the stock market.
Sure. You know, it is interesting. First of all, to go from 35% to 15% is such a huge thing. And I don't know if maybe that's a ploy. Maybe Trump's thinking, hey, I don't think I can get 15, but I can certainly get 25, or maybe I can get 20. Either way, it's going to be a drastic drop in corporate taxes. And hopefully, as you suggested, most of these corporations will then turn around and start expanding their business, which, as you suggested, hires more people, puts more money out on the street, which, you know, not only does it raise taxes, but it also spurs the economy forward.
Well, that's absolutely right, because when people are working and they're making more money, then they have the money to go spend. And so if taxes are lowered in corporations actually hire people, or get this, maybe actually give them a raise, the people that they already have, then those people can go start taking that money, put it in the economy. And by putting it into the economy, it's going to give the corporations more revenue. More revenue equals more profits, and more profits equals more taxes. And so you have the employees paying more taxes. You have the corporations paying more in taxes. Granted, it's at a smaller percent, but it's still going to be greater than the amount of taxes that are being collected now. And I think most people don't understand that entire process. Lowering taxes spurs the economy, and that's kind of counterintuitive. You know, you think right. If you want to spur the economy, you got to raise taxes because you need more revenue. That has the opposite effect, but that's what seems to be the logical approach. It's just doesn't work.
Right, right. All right, so let's talk about this. My understanding, and I want to get your thoughts and confirmation on this, is that one of the ways that Trump may attempt to solve the decrease in revenue is to eliminate the upfront deductions that Americans get by contributing to their retirement accounts, like the 401ks. Talk about this, because this to me seems like we're getting hit. You know, it seems like, you know, we're helping corporations, but now the working class stiffs are gonna take the brunt of it. So, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not so sure that this is not a blessing in disguise. It may actually be a blessing in disguise, and yet your average everyday American worker is not going to get that up front. I think they're going to have to wait till retirement. But I believe that 401ks and retirement plans were never really designed to benefit Americans. I actually believe that they were more designed, Bert, to benefit the government. You know, think about this for a second. If you put in $100,000 over the course of 10 years or 20 years into your retirement plan, you don't pay taxes on that money when you put it in. You get a tax break when you put it in. And you're hoping it grows. And let's say over a period of 20 years, maybe your $100,000 contributions grow to $300,000. Well, the taxes on $300,000 is going to be more than the taxes on $100,000. And if I ask you, which would you rather pay the taxes on, $300,000 or $100,000, there's only one common sense answer to that we'd rather pay the taxes on $100,000. But if I ask you which number would the government rather have you pay the taxes on, $100,000 or $300,000, well, the answer is obvious. They would rather have you pay the taxes on a larger amount for their retirement. And so I really think that in some regards, Americans have been, I don't know if I want to use the word duped, but misled about whether these things are as valuable as they are. And that's an issue. So by Trump basically saying, hey, we're going to eliminate the tax deduction up front, and which is what they're talking about doing. They're talking about treating all 401k contributions as Roth contributions, which means when you put the money in, you do not get a tax break up front, but it's going to grow tax-free for the rest of your life. When they talk about doing that, I actually think that in a decade or two decades or so, when those individuals start to withdraw from those accounts, they're going to be ecstatic that that's the way that it works. It's never fun paying taxes up front.
Right, right. No, absolutely correct. If it works out that way, then it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's like you said, it's a blessing in disguise. And so you put in $100,000 today. Yeah, you pay those taxes on those $100,000, but now it grows tax free. That's not a bad trade off.
It really is not a bad trade-off, but when you're out there making six figures or however much you're making, you know, $50,000, $100,000, and you're missing that deduction. Now, people tend to be short-sighted, and that's the problem. Is you know, you get your next paycheck, and now all of a sudden that couple hundred bucks that still comes out of your paycheck, but now you don't get the tax deduction. Well, that's where it's going to be one step back, and a lot of people aren't going to like that. But most people are short-sighted, and I think with this, you need to be long-term thinking.
Right, right. And look, the reality is that the average American, we know this, doesn't save enough money. You know, they're not at the 10% level. They're more like at the 2 or 3% level. So for a lot of people, it's going to have a very small impact. Yes, there are exceptions to those rules. You might have a guy or a gal who's making, you know, substantial contributions that they're gonna lose out on. However, if again back to this whole tax deduction or this tax-free
401k
money, Rob. Yeah, the 401. I mean, as you take the money out. As you start to pull down that money, it's all tax-free. That, to me, is a much better deal because ideally or theoretically, the you know, when that money sits there for the next 10, 20, 30 years, it's going to double, triple, hopefully quadruple. And so now, to me, you're getting it's not a bad deal. It's really not a bad deal if that's what they do.
Yeah, and that's the key is what's going to pan out. I mean, this is all on the table. We don't know what's going to pan out in the end and what the final is going to be. But think about it this way. I mean, I think this is a great analogy. You know, if I was a farmer and I came to anyone in your audience with a bag of seed, and I'm holding a bag of seed in my hands, and I said to your audience, I said, hey, I have a choice here. I got to pay taxes on this seed. I can either take a little bit of the seed out now and I can pay taxes on it now, or I can plant the crop and wait till I've got my harvest and then pay the taxes on the harvest. What do you think I should do? And I'll tell you, I've asked this question publicly hundreds of times, and not once has anyone said, well, you really need to wait for the harvest. Everyone says what's logical, and that is you take a little bit out of the seed and pay the taxes on the seed at this point, so the harvest is all yours later. And that's what would be happening with the 401k, Bert. You'd be paying the taxes on the seed now that you put in, and then when you retire, you'd have tax-free income down the road. And let me ask you, if taxes go up in the future at some point down the road when you retire, but your income is tax-free, does that tax increase really hurt you?
Not at all. And better yet, we know that taxes are going to go up in the future, right? That's almost a guaranteed that taxes will go up in the future, and not to have to worry about that, I think is a massive, massive windfall, because the reality is taxes chew up a lot of our wealth. And so if you could invest $100,000, $500,000, and then, you know, it doubles, triples, and then you're able to pull it out tax-free, dude, that's like, you know, a bump in, you know, that's a double whammy, because you got your money grew, and then it also grew tax-free. That's like a double dip.
It's a phenomenal, phenomenal way to save for the future. I recommend that everyone have some tax-free cash somewhere, and you're absolutely right. It's a great way to live down the road. And yet, you know, a lot of people haven't taken advantage of Roth IRAs. Roth IRAs became available in the mid-90s, and they're very underused at this point. And Roth 401ks are becoming available. A lot of people don't use them. They don't understand them. Why? Because they're thinking short term. They would rather save a little bit of money in taxes now and pay a whole lot more taxes down the road than take the hit now. I think a part of it's the education, Bert. I think, you know, we need more shows like yours that are going to get the word out there to people to give them some educational finance, because they don't get it in high school. I think that's a big mistake.
Well, you know what, and I think part of the problem is the mindset, because when I was young and dumb, you know, right out of school, you know, I'm making all this quote money, right? All this money's coming in. And let me tell you, I'm not thinking about retirement, Anthony. I'm not thinking about investment. I'm thinking, man, I just got out of school. I want to up-level my life. I want to take some trips, you know. And before you know it, you go from your 20s to your 30s in a blink of an eye, and then from your 30s to your 40, you know, with a couple of blinks of an eye. And we just, as young people, we don't understand how quickly that time, how quickly time passes. And if you don't have a system in place now, if you don't have a habit of saving money, better yet, saving and investing that money, then before you know it, you're going to be 40 and you have no retirement. Or worse, you're going to be 50 and no retirement.
Yeah, you're 100% correct, and you know, I think that goes back to where the education comes into play. You know, if you start teaching some of this stuff in high school, you know, is it really going to have an effect? Maybe not. I don't know. I know that stats show that people really don't get serious about retirement until their late 40s or early 50s. And even if you didn't save through your 20s and 30s and 40s, and now here you are 50 years old and you don't have a lot, I'll tell you, we have clients every day that come in that didn't start saving until their 50s, but you're in your peak earning years, you're making a decent amount of money, and if you follow some of these strategies in your 50s, absolutely it works, and you certainly want to start saving and saving tax-free. Of course, in your 20s or 30s is better, but if you're 50 and you don't have anything, guess what? You can't go back. The time to start is now, whatever age you are.
Right, absolutely. Today is the best day to get started. It's never too late. Let me ask you this, because I understand that there is a possibility, and again, you correct me if I'm wrong, that in addition to treating the 401k contributions as Roth-like contributions, that they are talking about a proposal to tax the growth in these 401ks like up to like 15%. Is this something that you think is going to pass? Is this something that's give me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, that I think that's horrible. I mean, you're taking away the tax break up front, which, as we talked about, maybe a silver lining actually, but to now go and tax the growth at 15%, I mean, you're subjecting the retirement plans to the same kind of taxes that are subject to capital gains for non-retirement plans today. And I think that would be a huge mistake. Here's the fallout from that, Bert. I think just by eliminating the deduction on the 401ks and forcing people to treat 401ks as a Roth contribution, I think what a lot of people are going to do is say, no, I don't want to contribute to that then. If I'm not going to get a tax break, I'm just not going to do it at all, because I'd rather have access to my money than not have access to my money. And I'm afraid that people will stop saving, and they might have good intentions. They might start to take that money and put it somewhere else with the intention of saving it somewhere else, but that won't happen. And when you have access to the money, you spend it. And
yes.
And I think that's a fallout. And if they're going to tax it at 15%, I think it's going to accelerate that thought process. And I wouldn't be surprised if 401k contributions go right down through the toilet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it. And let me tell you, that I think would have an impact on our economy eventually, right? Because you have all these people that aren't going to have enough money in savings, have no retirement or very little retirement. They're going to be dependent on more government subsidies. It's going to be a drain. And you know what? The biggest problem, and this is no news to anybody, the biggest problem is that the government does such a poor job and cannot be held accountable when they mismanage money, right? I mean, you can't fire them. And most people are so tired of the status quo that they don't even vote anymore. So even when a politician misspends an enormous amount of money, nothing happens. They don't get voted out of office. And I think that, you know, you're absolutely right. If all of a sudden you're going to get hit with, what do you call it? You got to pay your taxes on the front side of the 401 investment, and then you're going to get hit with that 15%. A lot of people are going to say, well, you know, I'm losing all my advantages here. Now, let me ask you this, back to the Roth IRA, if I'm not mistaken, allows you to make purchases within that Roth IRA. Is that correct? Like you can buy real estate and other investments within the Roth?
So if you have a self-directed IRA or Roth IRA, the answer is yes. There are some prohibited investments and some prohibited transactions that you absolutely can't do. I'm not a big fan of self-directed IRAs because if you do one wrong thing, it can blow up the IRA or Roth. You know, if you have real estate, as you mentioned, inside a Roth IRA, well, first of all, it's got to be purchased with IRA money. You can only contribute $5,500 or $6,500 a year into a Roth, depending on your age. So it's got to be purchased with IRA or Roth IRA money, and then you can only make so many contributions per year, that same limit. And if you have a rental property inside a Roth IRA, it can't be your personal residence, by the way. So if you thought about doing that, that's a prohibited transaction. It causes the entire Roth to blow up immediately. But if you have a rental inside your Roth IRA and you do something as simple as going over to the rental and changing a light bulb for your tenant, guess what? You just contributed to the Roth IRA, and that could be subject to penalties because you can only contribute so much every year. And if you make one misstep, it's like walking through a landmine. If you step on one of those mines, you're done. They'll blow it up, and it can be very devastating. So you got to be super careful and only work with an IRA custodian that specializes in self-directed IRAs.
Gotcha. So buying a car through your Roth is probably not going to happen.
And you can't do that, yes.
Yeah. But as you said, if you have the right type of management, you know, you have maybe 50 grand in a Roth, it might be, I'm throwing the word out there, might cautiously be the right vehicle for you to buy that rental with, or maybe, you know, whatever else. But I like what you said there, that there's got to be, that there's that cautionary disclosure there that one little screw up and all of a sudden you blow out that IRA and you lose all the benefits.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's a lot of other disadvantages even besides that. I mean, we're on the subject of real estate. Well, think about real estate for a second. If you buy a piece of property today and you sell that piece of property down the road, if you're single, you have a $250,000 capital gain exemption. If you're married, you have a $500,000 capital gain exemption. So you could sell your home down the road if you're married and not pay taxes on the first $500,000 of gain. Well, guess what? That's not true in an IRA. In an IRA, you're going to pay taxes on ordinary income of any amount that you eventually sell or take out of your IRA down the road. Another thing is when you leave an IRA to a beneficiary, they have minimum distributions. They've got to pay taxes on that amount. There's ways to make it bad. There's ways to make it good, but they still have to pay taxes on that amount. Whereas when you leave a home or real estate, whether it's a rental property or your personal residence, to a beneficiary, they get what's called full step-up in basis. And all that means is if they inherit the home and they sell the home, they pay zero taxes, period. If that home is in an IRA or a Roth IRA, the rules are completely different.
Wow. Yeah, so it goes to show you, you really need to get an expert to help you make these decisions because it's not a straight shot. It's not straight from A to B or it's not black and white. There's a lot of variations that can cause you problems. All right, so going back to the 401s, right now, these are things that may happen, Anthony. So let's talk right now. Let's talk today. Somebody is thinking, okay, well, what should I do with my 401k? Should I, you know, leave it alone? Should I be flipping it to a Roth? What should I be doing?
That's a great question. And if you do the wrong thing, it can have some devastating consequences for sure. My happiest clients in retirement are the clients that have half their money or so in pre-taxed accounts, 401ks, et cetera, and the other half their money in either tax-free accounts or taxable accounts. And so if you have, well, first of all, let me back up. What this allows them to do is it allows them to control their tax bracket. So let's say that they need $125,000 a year. Well, you can make up to $95,000 a year if you're retired and married and really never leave the 15% tax bracket. So if you need $125,000 a year, why not get the first $95,000 from tax-free sources, pay the tax on that so you stay in the 15% tax bracket, and then get the rest of whatever you need over and above that from tax-free sources or taxable sources. So you get a chance to control your income taxes in retirement. And so if you have made a mistake of having all your money in retirement plans at this point and you look at your portfolio and you got a big chunk in retirement and nothing outside of retirement, then you may want to be thinking about doing conversions, starting to convert some of that retirement money into tax-free money. You're going to pay the taxes now as you go. You don't have to do a conversion all at once. I would never recommend taking that whole chunk and converting it at one time. But if you work with someone that knows what they're doing, they can set up a strategy to do some conversions over 5 years or 10 years. Pay the taxes on the seed. Pay the taxes now and then develop a tax-free portfolio later. So in later years, you have half your money in tax-free Roth and half your money in tax pre-tax accounts, and that's a great way to go about it.
Yep, I like that. I like that. All right, so real quick, I want to get your take on the market right now. The market, in my opinion, is extremely expensive. I mean, the stocks are an all-time high. Real estate, it seems like an all-time high. It seems like investment opportunities are minimal because everything is so expensive. What's your take?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're in the midst of the second longest cyclical bull run in history. You know, the whole stock market adage is buy low, sell high. The market's up 350% since its low of March 9, 2009. And it's very expensive at this point, and I wouldn't recommend at this point anyone buy stocks, even if you are young and plan to buy and hold. You know, you could ride out the next wave, but if you could buy higher, if you had a choice of buying low, what would you do regardless of your age? So there's going to be certainly better opportunities to buy. What we have our clients doing, because I specialize in working with people that are over the age of 50, people that are more interested in protecting their principal and keeping their buying power, not people that are interested in gambling their principal, is we have our clients that are in investments that are not stock market related that are designed to produce income. So if you can get a portfolio of income producing investments and get a decent 4%, 5%, 6% rate of return without the risk of the stock market, then a lot of our clients are living off that interest and they don't have to gamble and take the risks that they have to if they're in the market.
I like that. Yep. Anthony, it's always good to have you on the show and looking forward to having you back again and talk some more about retirement and money and investment. And if people want to reach out to Anthony, they can check him out at Providence Financial. What's the website for Providence?
Yeah, it's providencefinancialinc.com.
Providencefinancialinc.com. Anthony Saccaro, thank you so much for stopping by.
Bert, thank you for your show. Thanks for educating everyone. And we'll keep listening and look forward to being here next time.
All righty. Good stuff there from Anthony Saccaro about you and your money. You know what? I like his take on this 401 possibility. If I got to pay taxes today on my 401 and not have to worry about it on the back end, that's a sexy, sexy thing to me. Now, of course, if they hit me with 15% growth, you know what? Still not the worst thing in the world. I don't like it. But, of course, who likes paying taxes? Anyways, always good to have you here, and I appreciate the fact that a lot of you have subscribed to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/BertJMartinez, youtube.com/BertJMartinez, and anyway, I appreciate your support, appreciate your comments there, and go check it out, youtube.com/BertJMartinez, that's B-E-R-T, J Martinez, and remember, as always, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.